Janine. Welcome everyone to Brighton Council's ordinary council meeting for the month of January, and Happy New Year. I'd like to begin by reminding everyone that this proceedings are being recorded in accordance with our Brighton Council audio recording of council and committee meetings policy 7.11. And I'd like to begin by acknowledging the Palawapakana, Tasmanian Aboriginal community, as the traditional owners of the skies, land and water of Lutruwita, and forward our respects to elders both past and present. Brighton Council acknowledges the continued connection the Tasmanian Aboriginal people still have to the skies, land and water of Lutruwita that provides them with the food, medicine and craft celebrated through ceremony today. Item two is apologies and applications for leave of absence. There are all councillors are present. Item three is confirmation of minutes, and item 3.1 is confirmation of minutes of the ordinary council meeting held on the 17th of December. They're included in our agenda. Is there any questions or corrections? If not, can I have someone move? Moved by Councillor Owen, second by Councillor McMaster. I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item four is declaration of interest. Does anyone wish to declare an interest on anything on the agenda this evening?
No.
Interests are declared. Item five is public question time and deputations. As the gallery is empty, I'll take that as there will be no deputations or questions. Item six is reports from council, and item 6.1 is the mayor's communications. And they're listed on page five of our agenda. Is there any questions of anything?
So we've got a new police inspector, Mayor.
He's a nice chap.
They all are.
Yeah, very, very open and happy to come along to our meetings as well. Didn't want to set up a formal meeting schedule with James and myself, but happy at any stage if we have issues to just give him a call, and he's more than willing to make himself available for us.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, really good. Obviously, the media event last on the 15th, last Wednesday, was excellent to receive a $10.5 million grant from the federal government that just needs the deed of arrangement to be signed, and the money will move for that particular South Brighton precinct is a real positive. So it was great to be able to be invited together with the Deputy Mayor to make that announcement with the Prime Minister and also with Rebecca White, the candidate for the Lions for the Labor Party in the next federal election. Obviously a bit of media interest over that and a lot of questions in regards to whether it was an election promise or whether it was guaranteed. And the simple answer is it is a grant. It is guaranteed. I mean, a new government could overturn it, but hopefully what we'll have is a deed signed well before then and it ticked off. So, yeah, if there's no further...
Just a point of clarification, Mr. Mayor, if we could just have the minutes reflect Susie Bauer, not as an MP.
Yep. Correct.
Otherwise, I'm happy to move.
Thank you. Moved by Councillor De La Torre, seconded by Councillor Owen. I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 6.2 is reports from council representatives. Are there any reports from around the table? No, there's nothing for this particular month. Item 7 is miscellaneous correspondence. There is no correspondence. Item 8 is notification of council workshops. There were no workshops. Item 9 is notice of on motion. There aren't any. Item 10 is consideration of supplementary items to the agenda. There are no supplementary items. Item 11 is reports from committees for the month of January. We have no committee meetings. Item 12 is council acting as a planning authority. And just like to remind everyone, we're acting under the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993. And item 12.1 is insert site-specific qualification into the Brighton local provision schedules to allow food services as a permitted use within the utility zone on land certificate title 164049/1. Hand over to Jo.
Thank you. This application seeks your endorsement to initiate a planning scheme amendment under section 40D of LUPA by inserting the site-specific qualification for the utility zone use table. This will allow for food services, if for a mobile food vendor, to be a permitted use. The amendment arises out of an action initially included in the Brighton Industrial Estate Brand and Place Strategy, endorsed in 2020, which aims to support an increase in amenity for workers and visitors to the hub by creating nodes to facilitate social interaction. And so as noted in the report, the site was selected given its proximity to the existing heavy vehicle use rest area, which is owned by the Crown. We've proceeded to design and construction of the hub will be underway. But whilst that is happening, we need to provide the mechanism by which we can facilitate the food uses on the site, hence the application. The applications, the amendments assessed as meeting the requirements of section 34 of the Act. It is in alignment with council strategies and state policies, and it's also consistent with the Southern Tasmanian Regional Land Use Strategy. If the application is endorsed and approved by the Tasmanian Planning Commission, next steps will be to update our mobile food vendor policy with agreement from the Crown and also enter into lease agreements and use agreements of the site for that food services use. So accordingly, it's recommended that the application is initiated in accordance with the recommendations in the report.
Thanks, Jo. Councillors, any questions?
Just one quick question. Will there be a limit on how often these food vans can be on site?
Currently, if we amend it, it would be as per our existing mobile food vendor policy, unless somebody had, we would bring that back to you for consideration, but whether you wanted to widen that scope or reduce it is something that we can consider.
Yeah, I just wondered, I mean, it wouldn't be not going to be a permanent thing.
I don't think it's not envisaged at that stage. No. It's more like, you know, Food Van Friday type things and specific events. We might get one or two that say, well, yes, we'll go out and operate at lunchtime occasionally, but as seen with our other food vans, nobody seems to go and set up or in one place. And currently, I think it's restricted to four uses at a site over a weekly period,
Thank you.
From memory.
Yeah.
Thanks, clarification. Each food van has to apply for a permit to site under the current law.
Yeah.
So they have to do that for the site.
Thank you.
My only question would be, I love the concept of it, I love the food van thing and the vibes and all that stuff. My only consideration would be, obviously when there's like lots of building works and stuff, those places go off and do really, really well, which is great. But for our local businesses and cafes and all that sort of thing, are we taking sort of money straight out of their pockets potentially for others to come and...
There is one existing food premises down in... But that meets the separation distances that are in the policy. So I suppose it's one of those things that we went through with when we brought the other policy into effect, is that we gave that consideration and talked about the impacts arising from that. But this is more to set up those specific social events that the strategy envisages, but it will be governed by the permit that's issued under the mobile food vendors policy as well.
Yeah, and that's one of those points are great, that so someone doesn't just sort of set up shop constantly.
Yeah, so there are restrictions and there's time restrictions, so you can't go and set up all day. So the policy, I think it's 3 or 4 hours is your limit. So by the time you come in, turn your machines on, sell your food and, yeah, for a couple of hours, then you need to go again.
Cool. Thank you.
This stop will make it more convenient for the truck drivers, because most of them truck drivers cannot pull up anywhere to get food. So with that being there, that's, you know, probably something that other vendors wouldn't normally go to. They'd probably go up the road somewhere to move food. So at least we're keeping it in the municipality with them using it.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Can I just get a bit of an indication of the cost involved in an application like this? And obviously footing some costs to have the scheme amended.
Yeah, so that's approximately $500 for the lodgement fees for the scheme, and then there's the advertising notification, and I can't remember off the top of my head, maybe $1,500.
Thank you. Joe, just on clarification, those zonings in that area, are takeaway stores discretionary in those zones?
I'd have to check. This is utilities zone though, so...
Yeah, no, I understand on that site, but just I'm thinking about if someone wants to try and set up another takeaway adjacent maybe. I'm just wondering whether that option is available anyway. Because it was some time ago that the previous takeaway was approved. I just thought the scheme... Mm. It would have been under a previous scheme, I would have thought. Wouldn't it?
Sorry, I've got to shut the scheme down. Food services are discretionary.
Mm.
So they can apply for it on other uses. But this is an application to support that town square that we're creating and allowing it to be used for that social... involvement for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillors, any further questions? If not, we have a recommendation on page 23 of our agenda that we proceed with this particular draft amendment. Someone better move. Moved by Councillor Gere, seconded by Councillor Curran. Is there any discussion or debate? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 12.2 is an application for subdivision, 4 lots and a boundary adjustment at Glenstone Road, Cobbs Hill Road in Bridgewater. And once again, I'll hand over to Jo.
Thank you. This is an application for subdivision that will result in the creation of 3 lots plus a road lot, and also 2 minor boundary adjustments to attach some slivers of land to adjoining land at 251 Glenstone and 175 Copsville Road. As you can see with the planning report, there's a fair bit of history with the site, lots of applications, etc. But essentially, this subdivision application is relating to a replacement of an existing approved stage development scheme. The boundary adjustments are realignment of property boundaries, which will also allow for assessment of the current development application that we have in relation to the existing use on the site. Current strata includes subdivision lot 4, which is owned separately to the landowner. Number of applications were submitted in support of the application. There's a bushfire hazard management plan, an addendum to a previous traffic impact assessment that was submitted for other DAs, and an actual values assessment, which wasn't really relevant to the subdivision application, as the works proposed under the subdivision application don't extend onto the rural land. The application was referred to a number of authorities, so it's quite a detailed site. So we've spoken to Department of State Growth, TAS Water, Department of Natural Resources and the Environment, TAS Gas Network, TAS Gas Pipeline, TAS Networks. And then during public exhibition, we also received comments from TAS Irrigation and TAS Rail. So pretty much most of the state authorities that are available. Application is discretionary for 2 issues, one being a subdivision, and the second relating to a natural assets code overlay, which crosses the corner of the northern corner of 221 Glenstone Road. Just assessing that the waterway that is uses on the site, and which you will see in the report, was modified when the industrial estate was created, and runs down the southern boundary of 251 Glenstone Road. There is still an overlay that sort of buffers that pipeline, but we've assessed it against the performance criterion, given that there's a road there, the waterway won't be impacted by the lots being created. But we consider that performance criteria can be satisfied with some conditions in relation to stormwater management for the road. The application was publicly exhibited. Two representers made submissions, with one representor making a supplementary response as well after they'd undertaken a site inspection. That resulted in some additional permit conditions being requested by TAS Irrigation. Second representor identified some issues such as stormwater management, lot design, and issues with the existing strata plan and common areas. That's been addressed in the report, but essentially the conditions that we will require for subdivision will manage those issues for stormwater and site servicing. The strata issues are more of a civil matter for the parties to work through themselves. TAS Water have also provided conditions in relation to water and sewer infrastructure. Generally that's it. So based on the assessment, the application is recommended for approval subject to conditions.
Thanks, Jo. The lot 5 to be added to FR 181190/2, is that the road?
No, it's just a slither of land. So the road is the lot 100.
Yep.
Yeah, and so that slither, so it's pretty much straightening boundaries and adding it to.
So where's that going to be added to the?
So that'll be added to 251 Glenstone Road, which is the Crown land that the applicant purchased more recently.
And the unusual shape of lot 3?
That sort of works with the existing lot layout, and so once again, they're subdividing, so the new boundary is in alignment with the pipeline easement that runs through there. You'll also notice in TAS Water's conditions, they've required just some straightening of that, hence the condition for a amended proposal plan to be submitted for us to consider and for TAS Water to consider.
No questions. We do have a recommendation on page 44 for approval of the subdivision subject to conditions. Is someone prepared to move? Moved by Councillor Ryan, second by Councillor Owen. Is there any discussion or debate?
Probably just one clarification. 76 conditions, is that sort of where fairly standard for a permit, or can we? Can we look to consolidate in the future? It just seems
a lot of those conditions were from other people. Yeah, but without going into too much detail, we do need to be quite stringent in our conditions that we're applying to ensure that we are hopefully able to achieve compliance. And that manages the site
and
as well.
That's consistent with other permits as well.
Thank you, Jeff. If there is no further points of clarification or debate, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Moving on to item 13, which is our officers' reports, and item 13.1 is December quarterly financial report. I think we'll hand over to Megan on behalf of Gillian.
Thank you. Obviously, it's Gillian's report, and I'll go through the operating revenue and the operating expenditure notes that she has provided to everyone. During the quarter ending December 2024, the year-to-date actual operating revenue was $17,921,289 compared to year-to-date budget operational revenue of 328,153. This represents a favourable result, 593,136 against budget. Explanations have been given on the areas that have had an increase of 10% above or below budget estimates and $10,000. Note 1, rates revenue is in line with budget. Note 2, statutory fees and fines. Statutory fines have been received 32.28% above the year-to-date budget expectations. Extra revenue has been received across all categories. However, significant mention for planning fees of approximately $78,000, more than expected, and dog infringements are also approximately $28,000, which is also more than expected. Note 3, use fees, favourable to budget, 27.26% or $121,000, predominantly due to the engineering fees, approximately $52,000, which I believe is Davoli Green, and dog licences over $32,000 for the year-to-date budget. Note number 4, the grants. Each year the Australian Government decides if the financial assistance payment will be paid in advance or in the financial year it is intended for. In the 24-25 year, the payment was made in advance, and therefore the year-to-date budget for this item will not reflect the year-to-date actual. Note number 5, contributions. Favourable to budget, $100,681. These amounts are public open space contributions that developers have paid in lieu of providing land. Note number 6, interest. Slightly reduced budget expectations, but still within the 10% parameters. Note number 7, commercial income. The year-to-date commercial income is favourable to budget, $143,434 or 25.07%. This is due to receiving funds from the state for the jobs hub to extend operations until 2027. This grant will be paid in 7 instalments over the next few financial years. Note number 8, investment revenue from Water Corporation is in line with budget. Operating expenditure, year-to-date operational expenditure, $8,742,793 compared to the budgeted year-to-date expenditure of $8,003,610. This is a $739,000 or 9.25% greater than budget estimates and materially in line with the budget. Explanations have been provided below on areas that are 10% or below budgeted estimates of $10,000. Note number 9, which is employee benefits, in line with budget. Note number 10, materials and services. Materials and services actual to budget has a variance of $586,000 or 13.9% over. The timing of the year-to-date budget does not take seasonal factors into account, so this should even out over the year. Significant items to consider for the quarter for this line item is a substantial amount spent on reserves landscaping, grading of roads and potholing. Note number 11, contributions are in line with budget. Note number 12, commercial activity. This amount is in relation to activities relevant to the Flocon hire. As the Flocon hire has been sold, this amount will be irrelevant in future reports. Note number 13, depreciation and amortisation. Depreciation will be journaled at the end of the year. Note number 14, other expenses are all in line with budget. And I just wanted to note, which you would have already noticed, that there is a new report that Gillian has put in, which is quarterly report notes to do with grant, any of the grants that we receive. So it's now reporting on all the grants and what's been received and what hasn't been received. Any questions?
Cool. Thank you. Councillors, any really, really hard questions?
I put it under the pump.
Once again, thanks. I think need to go to Gillian for providing such a comprehensive quarterly report. Yeah. It is just a simple, easy to read for non-accountant people, which is most of us, I reckon. So thank you. Councillors?
So moved.
Second.
that the December quarterly report be received. It's been moved by Councillor Della Torre and seconded by Councillor Murtagh. If there's no discussion or debate, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 13.2 is new policy dispute resolution. Janine, is this... no, James. Or Janine.
Very happy for Janine. take it away.
Happy to talk to this one. So this is actually a new policy under the Local Government Act. We have to create a policy before 10th September. So LEGAT have worked with all the councils around the state to come up with this model policy. So basically this is, rather than going to a code of conduct, as the first step, there's the dispute resolution policy that follow first. If you can't resolve your issues, then the code of conduct process comes into force. So this is step one before you want to do the code of conduct. So, yeah, it is a model policy that other councils will be adopting. I guess if you don't adopt this, then you need to come up with another suitable policy, but they'd be doing it before 10th September this year.
Madly trying to find the number of units that were in the policy to make a complaint.
10 more units?
Yes. The cost involved, do we know? $202 per penalty unit at the moment, are there?
What was that, sorry?
It's $200 roughly per penalty unit at the moment.
$202. Actually, the code of conduct one's fee units.
Okay.
Yeah, so 25 fee units. So fee units is much lower, so it's probably about $75 to $80, something like that.
Perfect, thank you. Clarifies.
Any further questions? If not, we have a recommendation that we adopt the dispute resolution policy 2.8 with a copy made publicly available on our council's website.
Second.
Moved by Councillor Della Torre, seconded by Councillor Geard. If there's any discussion or debate.
I just think it's a really sensible policy. It's good to have the same policy as other councils around the state, so there's some consistency, and it looks like a solid policy to see us through the future.
No, I agree, especially with the two-tier part of it. I think that's probably a very good idea where it sort of might fix things before it gets too big and out there in the media.
And I might add that hopefully we never get to use it.
I hope so.
Thank you. Without further ado, I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Thank you. Item 13.3 is council policy reviews. And once again, I'll hand over to Janine.
Yeah, so Elisa's been working behind the scenes, updating and combining policies. One in particular that's been combined is the schools one. So we used to have separate ones for citizenship prize, for school education bursaries, and sporting ones for
undergraduate students. Mr. Whelan.
Sorry. And so those have been combined. They still exist, but they're combined into one policy, which makes sense. The Brighton Agricultural one, so we had a policy on that, but now we've got the MOU, so that's all incorporated in that. And in actual fact, we donate and spend a lot more than $500 that the policy was. We're talking thousands there. What else? The councillors' expenses, entitlements and professional development, so that's all been incorporated in gifts and donations. So that's had a major overhaul, but it's pretty much still the same, just change of wording, change of titles. So a number of these policies are also just change of titles, CEO at the end. Some have been rescinded, like the staff industrial relations, because that's that is, you know, the role of the CEO. The dogs, kennel licences, that's just had some minor tweaks, change of name, my title and CEO, the Tasmanian Municipal Standards
I'll probably speak to that quickly. But effectively, that policy just served as a memo that, you know, they were being created and they were going to be in use, but, like, it didn't actually do anything in terms of the policy. So, yeah, we're still using them and it's not going to be effective.
Yeah. Give some donations. So that had no changes. And also the council expenses as well. Welcome to Country. Slight change, media releases, slight change, Australian citizenship ceremony dress code, slight change, and the rescinding the policy on financial request. Yes, anyone have any specific questions of any of those policies?
Mr. Mayor, yep, I set my alarm so I could ask a question, just to remind me. kennel licences, Janine. I noticed at the top it talks about zonings where they're not to be permitted. It talks about residential and Ponfuel.
Yeah, so no kennel licences allowed in the Ponfuel overlay.
Yep.
Or residential properties.
Yep. Okay.
So anything like rural living, anything non-residential, and depending on the size of the land to the amount of dogs that people can have.
Yeah, okay.
At the moment we've got the dog management policy, which gets updated, actually I think that's due for updating this year. So what we'll look at is this policy being consistent, like consistent at the moment, but we want to just review it. This policy is quite old, and the land size is can be a bit tricky for us as well, because some people are in rural living, but their land size is smaller than what the 1 to 2 hectares was. So we have been allowing people to have maximum 4 dogs.
Yeah.
So yes, we all have a major
rule when we do the dog. Okay. Yeah, I was thinking that there'd be more zones there where we would probably want to prohibit kennels, not just those two zones. Certainly all the residential ones. There is some that probably aren't included in our scheme at the moment that probably could later on. So I'm thinking all the commercial zones, probably the industrial zones that.
The ones in the industrial zones that we have are guard dogs, so that's under the Dog Control Act, so we don't have any control about that. So they are guard dogs, they're actually declared dangerous and they have to comply. The only thing that they don't comply with is being de-sexed. So once they've not become a guard dog, then that declaration is taken off.
So someone can't apply if they're in an industrial zone or a commercial zone.
Don't live.
Yeah, there is. But yeah, I suppose there is some non-conforming uses within those zones as well. I'm just thinking maybe we should turn it around and have zones where we think it's appropriate, rather zones where we think it's not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. Again. Yeah. When the dog control act. Yeah. Because I noticed.
And so the policy won't override the Dog Control Act. So if someone does happen, so we do currently have 2 guard dogs out at the industrial estate, which is very dangerous. We've got no control over that because they comply with the Dog Control Act.
Yeah.
So even if our policy said there were no kennel applications, not that they. So a kennel application is for 3 or more dogs. So they're allowed anyway because they've got 2 dogs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
But they are guard dogs, so they're defined differently.
Okay. And I noticed the minimum lot size went down to 0.5 hectare, which,
Yeah, because, I mean, probably for the last 5 years, the people that have applied for it, like I've got three dogs, they've got smaller lot sizes, so we could not fit them into that. And that's why this policy needs to be reviewed with the dog management policy, so it may not be on land size. So the land size goes back many, many, many years, and it just doesn't fit to what we've been used to these last
years. No, it's all sorts of variances, isn't there?
Yeah.
If you can clarify something else, if someone doesn't pay their kennel renewal, does that mean it expires? Do they have to reapply?
We chase them up and so visit them, talk to them, write to them. So it's probably a couple of years working with people before it will come back to council. So it's actually council that will revoke someone's kennel licence, and councillors, some of the old councillors here may recall that we've only ever done one of those, but then he complied, so it didn't actually get revoked. It can be quite tricky, Michael, with people not complying. Generally, I'd say 98% of them do, and just because they pay their fee, doesn't necessarily mean that they've got a valid kennel licence, because Alan goes and inspects the property, so they've got to comply with all that. If we get complaints during the course of the year, we will address, let's say barking dog complaints, we will address that with the licensee and things like that. So, we want to work with people rather than with the big stick saying, you haven't paid your fee or you haven't had an inspection, that sort of thing. Because if you cancel someone's licence, they have to reduce their dogs to two. Can you imagine a family of, that might have four dogs, and we're giving them a time frame to reduce their fur babies, for instance, down to two dogs?
Mm.
Quite difficult to work with people when you put restrictions like that on them.
Mm, yeah. Okay. Thank you. One other thing, can we jump across to acknowledgement of country? Just one clarification. Talks about having that at council meetings and committee meetings. Probably just putting it out there to the floor. We sometimes have both those things in the one night, and I just wonder whether it's a little bit of an overkill if we're doing it twice. I'm wondering what other councils do.
It's meant to be at the beginning of a ceremonial get together of people, so it should only be once on that occasion.
Yeah.
If it's the beginning.
Yeah.
I think through there, really, we keep it as a matter of course on the agenda, but up to the chair to sort of manage that. If it's, the chair normally reads it out at the council meeting, for example. It wouldn't have to be a choice whether to read it out aloud or not. On the minutes, on the agenda, but as you say, we've already done it in session, then up to the chair to manage that.
Okay. I think the word is used as should, maybe we could use may or something. Just a bit of a...
So you've got events where an acknowledgement should be considered included, so maybe?
Yeah, may, just if we're sort of duplicating at times. Need to include the term duplication or something in the one night?
So,
Michael,
we're talking about sort of when we have a finance committee meeting, a park and rest committee, meeting.
Hmm.
I think maybe a little bit of common sense by the chairs of those particular committees could be taken into account. As Councillor Ryan indicated, we could certainly read it at the first
Yeah.
Meeting at 4:45 or 5, whenever that may be, and then subsequently it's acknowledged in the agenda.
Yeah.
But it probably doesn't need to be read out again.
Yeah. I would totally agree with that.
Yeah, and I think just based on that, because we do record each individual meeting and each meeting, the recording you put up on our website, that I guess that needs to be clarified. So let's say the finance meeting's first, and the chairperson does the acknowledgement, then the planning authority's next, then it should be up to the chairperson of that planning authority to say that we've already done that at the previous meeting.
Yeah.
So if someone goes directly to the planning authority meeting and they don't turn around and say, oh, we didn't do the acknowledgement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just, I guess, be mindful about that.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
Yeah, totally agree.
The only problem I have with one there, and I've sort of chased it up, is in the way the name is put there. Of course, Tasmania is the official name of Tasmania. That should be first, and Liberty should be the second part, yeah, and not in abbreviation. It shouldn't be in brackets. It should be the two of them together. But Tasmania should be always first, like with the flag goes up. The Tasmanian flag is higher than, it's not as high, it's higher than any other flag bar the Australian flag. So when we have the committee meetings, we say Little Wind, and we've got it in brackets, we don't have to say Tasmania. That's not quite right, because it is Tasmania, but it's still Little Wind for the Aborigines as well. And I always put on the front of it First Nation, because that's what all the rest of the mainland are calling it, First Nation Party, in the front as well. So that's the only thing I totally disagree with.
So what you're saying is here, when we say Land and Water of Lutruwita...
Yeah, we should have Tasmania and Lutruwita, you know, in either both in brackets, but not just one in brackets. If you're going to say one, you say the other as well.
If I may, Mr. Mayor, it is actually talking about the traditional ownership.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah,
and their ownership was over Lutruwita, which we now refer to as Tasmania.
Yeah.
I think agreed.
Yeah.
Grammatically, it is correct.
Yeah. Okay.
In my eyes.
Because it gets named in different areas. Yeah. I just wondered about that. So only just a question I can find out about that matter.
Any other questions?
Just one probably point for clarification. Obviously with the gifts and donations register, we now have to, for all councillors, it looks like we now have to fill in a form and lodge a form, not just a simple email.
Yeah, well, the form has been around for quite some time, but I haven't been accepting emails.
Thank you for accepting
emails. And of course our gifts and donations register is updated monthly on our website, so Alexa does that. So councillors have emailed me with any gifts and beanies and caps and key rings, and I think Phil, you got most gifts just recently. Oh, Lee only got it. What did you get, a beanie?
Got a beanie.
And just on that, so if someone takes you out for coffee, for instance, and that coffee is, $8, but then the same person takes you out for coffee, multiple times over a few weeks, that adds up to $50. So it's not just whatever that first coffee is. If it's 10 cups of coffee, then they need to know about that.
Cumulative.
I'm not that lucky.
Councillors, is there any further questions? And obviously notes have been taken in regards to a couple of those policies. The dog policy will be updated later in this year, and some amendments can be made to that at that particular point. As I indicated with the policy for acknowledgement of country, I think each individual chair can take note and act accordingly. If that policy needs to be amended in the future, we certainly can do that. But on this evening, we have a recommendation on page 62 to adopt the following policies listed in item 1 on our agenda, and to rescind the policies listed under item 2. Is someone prepared to move? Moved by Councillor Della Torre, seconded by Councillor Irons. Is there any discussion or debate?
I think we've covered it.
Thank you. If there's nothing further, I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Again? Carried. Thank you. Item 14 is questions on notice. There are no questions on notice.
We will have another tweet next month for us, and then we should be done.
Cool. That concludes the ordinary council meeting for the month of January. Thank you very much for your attendance.
Mm.